Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Great to join you. The end of the week, this August the 1st, 2014. Gosh, the time is flying. Didn't seem like so long ago that we talked about being part of the 20th century, and we're now 14 years into the 21st century, and in so many ways it seems that our country is moving backwards. We're going to get a speeding ticket for going the wrong way on a one-way street. I thank all of you for joining me tonight, and for those of you new to the program, you should know that I'm a retired senior special agent with what had been the Immigration and Naturalization Service, an agency whose mission, at least it supposedly, has been taken up by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, a division of DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I call it. Also another division, and they purposefully left out the word immigration, HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, of all things, Homeland Security Investigations. God forbid we should talk about enforcing our immigration laws, and indeed we're not. And if you don't believe that we're not, just pick up a newspaper, turn on the TV, lead story, immigration. What's remarkable, of course, is that this has been the lead story for quite some time, but people just never realized it. I think they still don't realize it. But we'll get into it. I'm going to be flying solo this evening. Your phone calls are welcome at 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. I decided to do this program by myself this evening because I wanted to make some points that really need to be covered, that the mainstream media is either because they don't get it or because there's an agenda aren't discussing, but that's really where we're going to go with this evening's discussion. But in any event, I worked for the former INS for 30 years, which has given me what I think is a unique perspective on what immigration is really all about, how it impacts America and Americans, what we really need to do to fix the problems, and that's why I'm here ever since 9/11, having witnessed those terror attacks in my own hometown. Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House many years ago, great Democrat leader, had said that all politics is local. Well, at the end of the day, all crime and all terror attacks are local. We can hear about 3,000 people dying. We can hear about America being attacked. But on 9/11, it was a building complex on a street corner in Manhattan in my hometown of New York City that was demolished with all the people inside or fleeing from it. So at the end of the day, we go from macro to micro, and that's very important to think of it in those terms. Think about it on the large scale, but what will help you wrap your brain around the concept is to bring it down to the personal level. And suddenly, I think you will have a greater sense of clarity about what's really needed, what's really going on, and we'll explore perhaps why it's going on. Two websites that I really want you to visit, but please wait till after the show is over. My own personal website, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I'm going to venture a guess that, in fact, if you're listening to my program this evening, you probably have gone to my website to get the link. But in any event, please visit michaelcutler.net. Also, I write for a terrific organization, Californians for Population Stabilization, capsweb.org. They have been hammering away at the immigration issue, goodness, for quite some time. I join other writers on that great website, capsweb.org. They've been hammering the southwest border. They've been hammering away at the impact that this torrent of human trafficking or human workers coming across that border, human the victims of smuggling, as the administration calls them. Very often we're not talking about victims so much as smuggled aliens who, you know, hired smugglers to get them into the country. But, of course, there is a ton of exploitation, and we should look at that as well. But in any event, capsweb.org will be publishing my article within the next day or so, my most recent commentary, where I took another hard look at what's going on the border. And interestingly, the springboard for my piece was the result of an appearance I did on Neil Cavuto's program, Your World with Neil Cavuto, earlier this week. I let the administration have both barrels, and it became the headline, actually, for the article that I then based my commentary on. So we kind of backed into the commentary. I hope you find it interesting. I hope you find the other articles at capsweb.org interesting as well. It's always a good site, and they constantly update it, daily or even more frequently, with a whole bunch of insightful articles that will give you the perspective, the information you're not going to hear anywhere else. Anyway, just got done listening or watching Fox News. The House is still hammering away, trying to come up with some compromise legislation. You have a president who is so out of control, in my judgment, who is attempting to extort what he wants legislatively, and he's been doing this for quite some time. You know, he can talk about the executive actions that have been taken by prior administrations, and you may get some talking heads on TV to agree with him, but the sort of actions that he has been taking has had the effect of nullifying the protection of our immigration laws. Our immigration laws, first and foremost, are designed to protect us. And he is stripping away that protection at a very dangerous time in the history of this country. Just about every American, and I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative, I myself am a lifelong registered Democrat. This isn't about left or right, but it is about right or wrong. By enacting DACA, and I use the word enacting because I don't know how else to describe it. He basically took the DREAM Act, was, again, a farce, a charade, and couldn't get it through the legislative process. I've testified before Congress a bunch of times about that bill. I testified four times. The last time they tried it, back around 07, I was before three House and one Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. Most recently, I went before Congress. It was the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee a year ago, this past March. This idea of giving lawful status to millions of illegal aliens, it's a travesty. It makes no sense, and we'll get into why, but just so that you know, the president took basically the components of the DREAM Act, and when Congress did not enact the legislation, June 12, 2012, he stood in the Rose Garden and made some pretty outrageous claims. He said Congress had failed to act. And I think a lot of people, not understanding how government operates, may have thought, wow, Congress didn't act, so he's the gunslinger. He's taking the law in his own hands. Well, indeed, he did take the law and the Constitution, for that matter, in his own hands as well. Because Congress didn't fail to show up. They didn't vote present the way he did as a state legislator when he was in the Chicago House or the Chicago Senate. But they voted no. And voting down bad legislation is perhaps at least as important as voting yes for good legislation because it keeps things from getting out of hand. A jury that returns a not guilty verdict, whether you like the verdict or not, is not a jury that refused to do its job. It's a jury that decided the evidence wasn't there to support the charges. And that's exactly what the Senate did several times on various bills that involved the DREAM Act, comprehensive reform, amnesty, and so forth. So when he says the Congress didn't do its job, failed to act, it failed to act the way he wanted it to act. So that's item number one. Then he talked about how this is about children. We're going to help the kids, the young people. And we all know that Americans and people around the world know that Americans have a soft spot in their hearts for children. There are plenty of countries around the world where there are no child labor laws. There are plenty of countries where young women, and I mean young women, young teenagers, are sold into prostitution. Not in this country, thank God. We do respect our children. We are compassionate about children. If there's one thing that's going to get people dewy-eyed and choked up in America, by and large, it's when we bring up kids. You talk about children, and everyone's heart melts, and everybody knows that. So what we're seeing is that the terrorists of 9/11, the human traffickers, and our politicians, and this president in particular, have exploited the compassion of the American people to push an agenda or attempt to push an agenda that's antithetical to both America and Americans. Because if you look at the actual truth about the so-called DREAM Act, and I'd be remiss if I didn't make another point before we get beyond this. The DREAM Act, the A in DREAM Act, is the word alien. Isn't it remarkable that if you go on most programs, if you have a conversation, wherever you go, the word alien has all but been stricken from the vernacular? God forbid you should use the word alien. It is a word of hatred, we're told. They compare it to the N-word. It's truly astonishing. Anytime you raise that word alien, God help you, run for your life, because you're going to be attacked and attacked vigorously. By the way, the word alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. If you could possibly see an insult in that definition, I really want to know what the insult is. But the point is that we have been given this nonsense, this propaganda that started with Jimmy Carter when he ordered that immigration agents no longer use the word alien to describe aliens, or illegal aliens to describe illegal aliens. Then he suggested we call them undocumented workers. There are plenty of aliens who are not illegal because they worked without permission. And this business of undocumented should give everybody cause for pause. Undocumented means they have no identity documents, which raises two possibilities. They truly don't have any. They ran out of their country and just kept on trucking and didn't take any documentation with them, ID. Or perhaps they know that their name is on every terror watch list or a fugitive watch list all over the world. So God knows if they walk into some country and give their real name, they're liable to wind up at the point of a gun and handcuffs and leg irons and dragged off to prison and perhaps sent somewhere to stand trial for mass murder. So we don't know who people are who say, well, I'm undocumented. Imagine getting pulled over by a police officer for speeding and saying, I'm undocumented. There was a time when that happened in these United States when my phone would ring at my office at immigration and we would go out and the cops would say, we just arrested some guy who has no ID on him, and we know he's from another country. And we would take the guy into custody. Today, we want to give them citizenship. This is lunacy. So let's get past the idea of undocumented. When people run the border, folks, what no one is willing to admit or consider is that they're uninspected. Uninspected. And I love George Orwell because he had so many wonderful quotes. And one of George Orwell's quotes that I really love is, he says, to see what is in front of one nose needs a constant struggle. Think about that. To see what's in front of one's nose needs a constant struggle. Well, it might be because you have a big schnoz, or more than likely, you know, when things get so close to us, we don't see it. What we're not seeing is the fact that an alien who runs the border isn't undocumented, but he or she is uninspected. Nobody would get on board an airplane if we saw people getting on that plane we're about to head towards, if we saw a bunch of people sneak past TSA. We'd say, wait a minute, if they're not willing to be inspected, if they're not willing to let TSA peek into their suitcase or their backpack, if they're not willing to show ID, maybe they're up to something. Mayor Bloomberg would have agreed with that. Bloomberg was furious because he complained how the prosecutors in the Bronx here in New York weren't prosecuting people who trespass into public housing. Bloomberg said, wow, if you let trespassers get away with it, we'll be back to the bad old days of crime in New York where the murder rate was 2,000 a year. We've got to go after these trespassers because trespassers are dangerous. Everybody who lives in the housing projects wants those police officers to ask them, who are you? What are you doing here? Bravo, Bloomberg. Except Bloomberg lacked mouth-ear coordination. His own ears couldn't hear what his own mouth was saying because Bloomberg, not unlike Rudy Giuliani before him, America's mayor, placed or had put into place sanctuary policies, which meant that if you had trespassed on America, Mayor Bloomberg wants to give you or wanted to give you the key to the city. We have the same problem with de Blasio today. If you're here illegally, if you're undocumented, obviously the problem is you're missing documents, so we'll give you documents. No problem. Now you're no longer undocumented. It's insanity. It's not a hall pass. It's not the child that had to go to the bathroom so badly in school that he ran into the hallway without the pass and some teacher ran after him to give him a hall pass. so that he doesn't get in trouble with the principal. That would probably make sense. Better the kid should get to the bathroom in time than have an accident. The documents aren't a hall pass. The reason that those documents are essential, the reason that we show passports when we travel internationally, is so that the government officials acting on behalf of the government of that country that they're going to can make certain as to whether or not it is safe and in the best interests of that country to let that foreigner, that alien, in. This isn't that complicated, but this is not a hall pass where we're chasing them down in the hallway saying, wait a minute, you forgot your pass, you forgot your pass. No, it's a very different story. This is about providing people who, for one reason or another, known only to themselves, don't have with them official, reliable, authentic identity documents. This is as dopey as it gets. And when you listen to these supposedly smart people on television not getting it, when you see these politicians who don't get it, it leaves you scratching your head. How in the world do you not understand the significance? Pardon me. Now, Obama referred to the people that were going to participate in this program, this DACA, Deferred Action Childhood Arrival. He said, well, they're kids, they're children. He kept using those words. But yet what most people to this day don't know, and when I do speaking engagements, and I always like to ask that question, do you know how old the age cutoff is for people to participate in this Deferred Action Dream Act nightmare? They'll say, well, 18, 19, 21, 17, 12, you know. I feel like we're playing bingo. They just need to have a letter follow the number or something. The age cutoff is 31. Now, look, let's have a little straight talk. I'm on the wrong side of 60. 31 certainly sounds young to me. If I was 31 again tomorrow, I'd certainly hold a party. I'd be in the Twilight Zone, I'm sure, if I was. But it's not a child. 31, by most society's standards, is middle age, or at the very least, certainly an adult. So how does it become a child? Well, the child has to have the ability or willingness to go forward and say, hey, you know what? I entered the United States illegally before my 15th birthday. Well, I want everyone to just stop and give this some thought. How do you substantiate that claim? They are not doing face-to-face interviews. They are not conducting field investigations to make certain that the information contained in the paperwork is accurate or truthful. So it's like the magic words, you know, you watch the magician on stage and he or she with sweeping arm gestures and dramatic light and smoke and maybe a very pretty assistant jumping around the stage in the real nice little get-up so everyone's busy watching her in the smoke and the whole bit and says abracadabra or hocus pocus or whatever. And the magic words open up the whole deal. Well, we know that the words are just part of the show. But where immigration is concerned, the magic word for the dreamer is, I entered before I was 15. And everybody knows that no one's going to check to see if they're lying. Everybody knows this. This isn't the first time. The General Accountability Office, the GAO, is so clear about how immigration is loaded with fraud. We have no idea who's here. There is a 70% fraud rate, according to government surveys, where political asylum is concerned. Again, little straight talk. I'm Jewish. My grandmother died in the Holocaust. I'm a big fan of political asylum, provided that the system has integrity, but it doesn't. It doesn't. The issue is fraud. And so I was listening to the folks today over at Fox, and you can hear it on every channel, and I don't think they're bad people. I think they just don't get it. Well, these people are here. We can't deport 11 million, right? We can't deport 11 million. Or today they use the number 12 million. It's probably 30 million. To his credit, Chris Wallace made that point that there are some people who think it may be 30 million or more. Well, we can't deport them all. And so this way they'll pay their taxes out of the shadows. They're not in the shadows. In fact, when I was on with Neil Cavuto this past week, what had Neil's head spinning like a top, and I've been on Neil's program many times over the past several years. He does a great job. I always love being on his program. But I'd never seen him more worked up than this last week when I was on the program, because you had illegal aliens holding up signs proclaiming that they were illegal aliens, demanding lawful status, demanding all kinds of benefits, and they were demonstrating right outside the White House. And you saw law enforcement standing there watching this massive demonstration outside the White House. They even had some illegal aliens speak to members of Congress, have a hearing, in essence, in Washington. And Neil, and rightfully so, said, how in the world do you declare yourself to be an illegal alien and be able to do so with such arrogance and defiance, and nobody from law enforcement takes any action? And the answer is simple. The law enforcement officials were told to take no action. Because when I was an immigration agent, if I found somebody who I was suspicious of as being illegal, at the very least, I would bring him into the office for more detailed questioning. You know, once you got past reasonable suspicion, probable cause, certainly that's when, you know, the guy's in front of, or the gal's in front of an immigration judge back in the good old days, and we thought we had problems back then. So here you have people saying, yeah, I'm an illegal alien. Well, this goes beyond probable cause. This is certainty just about. Self-proclaimed illegal alien. Okay, imagine that on the arrest report. Alien admitted to being here illegally. And we had that happen sometimes. Case closed. No, they're out there screaming, I'm an illegal alien, and you have members of Congress demanding to know why we haven't turned them into citizens. That's the lunacy of it. That's the lunacy. Because what this does is to make a mockery of our own laws, our own rules. It's insulting to Americans. It's particularly insulting, and I've encountered this frequently in my travels around the country. The people most offended, most infuriated by it, tend to be people who are legal immigrants and went through the process and became United States citizens. My own mother was a naturalized American. My first wife, who passed away from cancer many years ago, tragically, her parents came here after the Holocaust. They were in concentration camps. And when we used to sit around the dinner table, they told me the stories about how they kissed the ground when they got here, how they were scared to death the night before they took their citizenship test. Oh, my God, what if I fail? And so what we are now witnessing are these demonstrators outside the White House demanding of the government all sorts of benefits to which under the law they have absolutely no entitlement, zero, zipperoonie. A president saying we need to give these people everything they want. They are backed up by more politicians saying we need to give them whatever they want. And then they will refer to people such as myself and such as yourself if you're listening and if you've been accused of being anti-immigrant. We've got to learn how to push back. So write this down. It is not anti-immigrant to want to see the immigration laws enforced. That is a huge smelling, stinking, rotting lie. Okay? The immigration laws that we want to see enforced certainly tell us who to keep out and who to kick out. The actions I took when I was an immigration inspector for the first 4 years of my 30-year career were a guide to what I did in that little inspections booth out at Kennedy International Airport. Under the law, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, categories of illegal of aliens to be excluded. So certainly the law guided our decisions. As an agent, you went back into the law to determine whether an alien was subject to arrest for violating the laws, because not every alien who was subject to arrest for violating the laws ran our borders. I arrested many aliens who were given resident alien status and went on to commit felonies. We on occasion arrested naturalized citizens who acquired citizenship by lying. These were hardly undocumented aliens. These were aliens who violated immigration laws that were designed to protect the lives and the jobs of Americans and to protect the national security of the United States. So how in the world is it anti-immigrant to say, I want you to enforce the laws, because in addition, telling us who we should keep out and who we should remove or deport, those laws told us who to give citizenship to, who to give green cards to. Last year, the United States admitted more than 1 million lawful immigrants, or approximately 1 million. The year before, it was over 1 million. Last year, we naturalized, provided U.S. citizenship to more than a half million new citizens. Foreign nationals who had green cards met the requirements, at least I hope they did, because, again, there's so little integrity to the whole process these days, and we gave them citizenship. We gave people political asylum under those laws. We admitted tens of millions of foreign visitors as non-immigrants, temporary visitors under those laws. So how in the world is it anti-immigrant to say, I want you to enforce the very same laws that allow immigrants to come to the United States and ultimately become citizens if they so desire? There is no more pro-immigrant laws in the world than our immigration laws, because it's under those laws that we admit those immigrants. It's a bald-faced lie. But you know what? Almost everything about immigration, when you hear it in the media, is either a lie or, at the very least, mistaken information, a mistruth. We're told, well, we've got to get these folks out of the shadows. I will go back to not only that demonstration, but the demonstrations that we witness around the country in May every year by the tens of thousands out there with the banners and making a racket and making noise and screaming and demanding. Is that how you hide in the shadows? Did you ever see anybody hiding in the shadows in bright sunlight, marching up and down the block, waving signs, telling the world that you're an illegal alien? What shadows are we talking about? They're hiding in the shadows. No, what they're doing is they're hiding behind stolen identities, perhaps. And think of the damage that does to the poor American or the lawful immigrant whose identity is stolen and credit is wrecked. That's one of the reasons why we have such a high level of identity theft. Some of it is just a matter of getting money out of people's bank accounts and opening credit cards, absolutely. But there's a solid percentage, and I don't know the percentage, but goodness, we have had so many illegal aliens use other people's Social Security numbers and so forth, and it's created all kinds of problems for people. There have been cases of people on disability being accused of committing fraud. How can you be disabled when last year you made $35,000 on a job, you know, doing physical labor or something? And the guy says, what do you mean? And it turned out that somebody had stolen his ID and was working. We've had cases where you might have 100 or 150 different people using the same Social Security number in states throughout the United States. It's that screwy. So we keep hearing this mythology that if only we would let these folks come out of the shadows and pay their taxes, this has nothing to do with taxes. I'm going to tell you what it does have to do with, though. It has to do with national security. The 9/11 Commission issued its report 10 years ago last week. The 9/11 Commission, of course, was convened for the purpose of figuring out what went wrong so it wouldn't happen again, not unlike the way that the transportation folks come out after a plane crash or a train crash to figure out why that airplane fell from the sky and obliterated the lives of a couple of hundred people. The NTSB does that work so that we can figure out what's wrong. When the Space Shuttle Challenger and then when Space Shuttle Columbia were destroyed because of accidents, they convened panels in boards of inquiry, same purpose. The military convenes boards of inquiry when there are deaths and they want to make certain that they have the reasons figured out so it doesn't happen again. Was it human error? Was it a mechanical failure? Was it a little bit of both? What happened? How do we prevent it from happening again? That's common sense. You know, insanity is doing the same thing the same way and expecting a different outcome. So when there's a plane crash, when there's some serious incident, there's a board of inquiry. Why did it happen? It's not just about assigning blame. It's about trying to figure out what the problem is. That was the reason for the 9/11 Commission. At least that's what we were told. I can also tell you that in March of 2002, 6 months after the 9/11 attacks, to everybody's horror and embarrassment, I mean, they were mortified, it was determined that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, had been granted authorization to attend flight school in the United States. Flight school, of all places. These guys were two of the dead, of the 9/11 hijackers, the 19 hijackers who did the hijacking on 9/11, if I can get the words out. I was called to testify at the hearing. I was thunderstruck when I got the phone call from Sheila Jackson Lee's counsel. I had just come out of a heated meeting with Anthony Weiner, who infuriated me because he was concerned. He told me that if we really enforced the immigration laws, that we might not be getting all the students to attend school, and God knows the harm this would do to learning institutions. And that's a whole story by itself, the fact that today we have over 1 million foreign students studying in our schools, over 1 million. And while I'm sure there are some wonderful people who come from Saudi Arabia, we also know that the Saudis played a role in 9/11. Do you know that among the top 10 countries that send us their foreign students, Saudi Arabia is one of them? So, I mean, the lunacy of what we've not learned in terms of bringing in foreign competition for American students and American high-tech workers, bringing in people who perhaps don't like us and will take the high-tech training and use it against us. We've trained some of the terrorists, as it turned out, in the United States. This is crazy. And when I say trained, I mean PhDs. So you look at all of this, but because of greed, no one's willing to deal with the issues in an honest and forthright way. So the 9/11 Commission was convened to be able to figure out what went wrong. I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. And one of the things that the 9/11 Commission said to look at immigration fraud. But as much as they talked about it, the members of the staff that worked for the commission, the attorneys, the special agents, some of them came from the FBI, some came from INS, they came from other agencies. I know at least a couple of the people who were from the Immigration Service who were drafted to serve with the 9/11 Commission. They told the commission, and they basically told America, hey, look, for all the good work the commission did, they didn't go far enough on the issue of immigration. So the 9/11 Commission staff issued their own report. It's available online for free, my favorite price. Go to my website, michaelcutler.net. Go to capsweb.org. I've been writing articles recently for Front Page Magazine. I always include a link. So you click on the link, you can find the actual report. Whatever I tell you is verifiable. Unlike the other side that make the accusations and become insulting and nasty and lie through their teeth. I call them the immigration anarchists. They're not pro-immigrant. If I hear another person tell me that the folks who oppose us are pro-immigrant, I will have a cow. I promise you, I will have a mooing cow. They're not pro-immigrant. They are immigration anarchists. They are in opposition to national security. They are looking to hurt American workers' prospects for decent jobs. That's what they're doing. This is not pro-immigrant. They are, if anything, anti-immigrant. But they're the ones who are out there making all these crazy statements. So this is about being pro-immigrant for real. But I digress. The point is that the 9/11 Commission staff issued their own report. And their own report was so crystal clear. Here is how the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report begins. Very first words that you read right after the index. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa, and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. So that's right off the bat. And again, going back to what I observed at that hearing when I testified, you should have heard the members of Congress ranting and raving. The chairman of the committee back in those days. We must never, ever again allow terrorists to enter the country, and if they do, we must hunt them down, arrest them, on and on and on. And everybody is in righteous indignation over what happened. As I said, Sheila Jackson Lee actually was the person, the member of Congress, who invited me. What went wrong? How could we be that stupid? How could the Bush administration have provided known terrorists with authorization to go to flight school? Crazy stuff. crazy. And the commissioner was there, Ziegler. The turnout was amazing. I'd never seen anything like it. The media was there from all over the world because you had the Ziegler, the former immigration commissioner. I was there. Rudy Decker, the guy from the flight school who discovered that Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi had been granted authorization to attend his flight school after the attacks, and the guy from the computer company who mailed out the authorization letters was there. So it was the four of us. And boy, oh boy, both sides of the aisle, this is outrageous. We can't do it. And Ziegler was telling them, well, in the next 6 months, we're going to accomplish this milestone. And by next year, we're going to have this in place. And then we're going to have that in place. You really need to watch the hearing. It's on C-SPAN. Almost nothing that we were promised has been accomplished to this day. Stop and think. Let it sink in. America was attacked on December 7th, 1941 at Pearl Harbor. 3,000 people, mostly servicemen and women, were killed. Ironically, that's very close to the casualty count of what we suffered on 9/11. It took 44 months. For those of you mathematically challenged, that's less than 4 years to win the war. America, working with its allies, built fleets of airplanes that had never existed before, fleets of ships. All sorts of progress was made, radar installations. Heck, atom bombs were constructed with brand-new and proven technology. We literally and figuratively moved heaven and earth, and in 44 months, the problem was solved. The Nazis, the Axis powers, were put out of business. 44 months. Where are we today? Where are we today? In fact, if you look at the border security legislation they're talking about, in 5 years, we'll check in to see if everything is going the way it's supposed to be going, because they want operational control, 90% operational control over the high traffic areas. Does that sound like real border security or a game of mirrors and smoke and nonsense? So, I mean, understand the parallels and understand the differences. The greatest generation of our fathers and grandfathers, or of America's prior generation, my folks weren't here yet back then. My dad was, but he, you know, it was his generation. But the point of the matter is that greatest generation figured out how to save our lives and our country. And today, we've become the gang that can't shoot straight. 44 months to win the Second World War, we're coming up on the 13th anniversary of 9/11, and we still can't figure out how to secure a border or how to make certain that the findings of the 9/11 Commission are in place. Now, we're being told if we give these people documents, we'll bring them out of the shadows. I want to know what that really means, bring them out of the shadows. If you can't verify their names, what you're doing is providing opportunities for terrorists and criminals to embed themselves, hide in plain sight. This is, again, from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This little paragraph appears on page 47. Please listen to the language. Please understand that when they talk about comprehensive reform, they are violating this paragraph and the next paragraph that I'm going to read to you. And yet you never, ever hear anybody talk about this. Never. Again, quoting. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they entered the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program after falsely claiming that he picked beans in Florida. He got away with that lie, folks. Now, that's the end of the quote. Now I'm telling you, he got away with the lie. Because the only reason they found out that he lied was after the attacks, they went back and backtracked all of his paperwork and found out that he had lied. But the lie got him what he and his murderous colleagues wanted, the ability to hide. It's not out of the shadows. That's giving them camouflage. But now, if that was bad, hold on to your hats, because we are to come to page 98. terrorists in the 1990s, again quoting, as well as the September 11th hijackers needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit, think about DACA, think about all this stuff, folks. The act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute out of the shadows? Really? Are we that stupid and that inept? Are we suicidal as a nation? Do we want another terrorist attack? Because this is exactly what they're warning about in that report, and this is exactly what comprehensive reform would do. How in the world do you not look at the 9/11 Commission report? And I made this part of my testimony, by the way, when I went before the Senate Judiciary Committee last year. And if, God forbid, there's another terrorist attack, the fact that there is no integrity to this program, I don't want to see any more of those liars standing in front of the microphones and cameras spewing their BS that stunk up the room talking about how nobody connected the dots. They lied then, they're lying now. What do I mean by the fact they lied then? I did my very first congressional hearing, ladies and gentlemen, on May 20th, 1997. There was a huge panel, and the topic of the hearing was immigration fraud and visa fraud. The reason for the hearing were the two terrorist attacks carried out in 1993. First, a guy by the name of Amiel Kansi shot up the CIA on, I believe it was January 27th, certainly at the end of January 1993. He was from Pakistan, applied for political asylum, and lied through his teeth. 1 month later, we have the first attack at the World Trade Center. Every one of the aliens involved lied on that visa application. Every one of the aliens managed to hide in plain sight. And in fact, Ramzi Youssef applied for and received political asylum, even though he entered the United States with counterfeit identity documents. One of his would-be colleagues was stopped at a port of entry and not permitted in. So you got Ramzi Youssef coming in saying political asylum, kind of like abracadabra, hocus pocus, and we let him stay here. We gave him lawful status. Mahmoud Abu Alima, as you heard, lied about working on a farm. I had argued with Chuck Schumer back in 1985. He was one of the key architects of the agricultural provisions of the 86 amnesty. And I said to him, I said, Congressman, why in the world do you want to have a program like this? You don't even have a farm in your district. Whereupon he basically told me that I should leave his office. Don't you dare confuse these people with the facts. And then you've got these talking heads on TV, and they wear their very expensive clothing, and they have this knowing little smile, which sickens me in some cases because they're just being so damn pompous and arrogant. They might as well be talking about neurosurgery for all that they know about the topic, but they have the answers. They have the answers, and with certainty, with an unwavering voice, well, they didn't pass comprehensive reform. Huh, what do you expect? It's good for the economy. How is it good for the economy to add millions of workers to a labor pool that can't find work? And when you ask members of Congress about it, they'll say, well, they're working already. And funny story there, I tried to make that point about they're working already when I did an interview with Stuart Varney, when Stuart was filling in for Neil Cavuto last July, when I spoke at an event known as the D.C. March for Jobs, that in part was sponsored by Progressives for Immigration Reform. In fact, I'm working with them on a major article that should be out within the next couple of weeks. We're putting the finishing touches on it. It's been a very hectic couple of weeks with all the news and all the requests I've had for media appearances and so forth. But the point that I made when I was on with Varney, and of course the other side immediately got busy with their creative science fiction writers and misinterpreted purposely what I said. When we legalized those 3.5 to 4 million aliens they went back to their employers and said, hey, Charlie, I may have been working for you, but I'm no longer going to work off the books, and I'm certainly not going to work for $6 an hour. Because I know that the prevailing wage on my job maybe in those days was $10 or $11 an hour. And if you want me to work weekends, I'll do it, but I'm not going to work without being paid overtime. And you got to address the safety issues because there's no emergency exit or there's too much filth or we need air conditioning or whatever their reasonable issues were that under the labor laws of our country they're entitled to, under the OSHA laws, that they're entitled to, the occupational safety laws. And, of course, the more unscrupulous of these employers, and that's generally who hires illegal aliens, didn't go along with those demands, which were entirely reasonable. They simply fired these people. So the point they made on the air is that once legalized and you can't exploit your workers, you fire them. They left out the other half where I said, and you fire them, and said, oh, this guy doesn't like the idea that if they enact comprehensive reform, exploitation will stop. It won't stop. They will just hire the next wave of illegal aliens, which is how we got into this mess in the first. Supposedly, we had zero illegal aliens after the amnesty of 86. And what we wound up with since that amnesty, that supposedly was a one-time deal to clear things out, and finally we would have a system starting brand new, since then we've had the biggest, most massive influx of illegal aliens in the history of the United States of America. But, of course, don't let the truth get in the way of the narrative. It's easier to mock and make, you know, crazy remarks that, yes, my concern was that if we pass comprehensive reform, the exploitation will stop, and this guy Cutler must be a thug, I guess. It's about the reality that generally these employers will simply hire the next wave, and we'll be back to where we started from with one difference. Back in 86, we wound up with about 3.5 to 4 million illegal aliens now competing with Americans on jobs across the spectrum. Now we could be looking at 30 million, maybe more. Maybe more. We will have no idea as to when they got here either. You see, everyone says things, but they don't understand that if you can't prove it, it doesn't matter. For example, it sounds reasonable to say, well, if someone's been living in the country for 5 years, and they've been minding their own business, and they've never been arrested, that they're safe to give lawful status to, and then they can contribute to our society, and the sun will shine, and the guys aren't going to need Viagra. Sounds good. What nobody ever asks is how do you verify when somebody actually entered the United States when you can't possibly interview them? How in the world do you conduct 30 million interviews? The answer is you don't. When they tell you that they're going to clear up the backlog of applications, well, that sounds good because everybody hates backlogs, everybody hates red tape, everybody hates government inefficiency. Well, then you need to know that adjudicators, and I was an adjudications officer for a year, this is the benefit of having taken the scenic tour, adjudications officers can approve an application in under 30 minutes, but it can take far longer to deny an application. So if you are hell-bent for clearing up the backlog, you can tell your people, hey, listen, fraud is a big problem. It's about national security. Make certain you look to find it. But, by the way, you need to process 12 applications a day. Well, if you're processing 12 a day, maybe you can get away with bouncing one or two applications per month by the time you're done with the report writing, the paper writing, waiting for the agents to come back having done a full investigation for you. And then you have to submit your report to the attorneys to make sure it possesses legal sufficiency. It's time-consuming. And if you have a backlog and you're Lucy at the Bonbon Factory trying to deal with an onslaught of 20 or 30 or 35 or 40 million applications, look, Obama said the change had come to America, and this is how the change is coming. I just wrote an article about that for capsweb.org. Change is coming to America. We are bringing in millions of people from third world countries, very often, who have issues with education, not because they're stupid. This isn't anything like that. But the Congressional Budget Office years ago, about 3 or 4 years ago, said that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate children who aren't fluent in the English language. So obviously, if you come here illegally from another country, the likelihood is that you're not going to be fluent in the English language. We are out of money for our own kids. We are terminating early intervention programs for American children who have autism. My own son got a scholarship to engineering school because of early intervention. He has Asperger's. Thank God the programs are in place. Those programs are becoming scarcer and scarcer. So this not only hurts our country, but it hurts the lives of American kids who need to be given every opportunity to live exciting, rich, and fulfilling lives. That's what early intervention is about. Why is it that compassion no longer seems to apply for American students, American children, American families? Why is it that we talk about the American dream for illegal aliens, but more and more Americans are finding the American dream ever more elusive as more and more Americans fall below the poverty line? Why is that? It's because our government does not represent the people, but represents the corporations and the special interest groups who can bribe them. Give them campaign contributions. It's so hard. I get so confused. Those bribery and campaign contributions, I have a problem sometimes. You know, those terms are so similar. You know, because think about it. If you have an unscrupulous congressman, and they not all are, by the way, there are some real heroes out there. My friend Lou Barlett is a great example. Senator Jeff Sessions, Senator Chuck Grassley, Senator David Vitter, Congressman Steve King. These are real heroes. There are others, but you have to look wide and far to find them. But when you have politicians who are morally corrupt and they're told, we're going to give you a contribution, and they let it be known one way or the other, what's expected, it's remarkable. And then you hear the nonsense about how this is good for the U.S. economy. How is it good for the U.S. economy that foreign nationals send money out of our economy? The whole idea to the economic stimulus package was to have money circulating within the economy. Economists talk about the multiplier effect. If you put a dollar into the economy, it generates $3 in business. You know, if I have that dollar burning a hole in my wallet and I go out and I buy a battery from a guy that runs a little store, at the end of the week, the guy that sells the batteries has a couple of $100 to play around with, so maybe he goes to the lumber yard and he buys some wood so he can rebuild his deck, and then he hires one of his neighbors to help him do the job because it's just too arduous for one guy. So the guy that he gives the money to and the lumber guy both have some money, and maybe the guy at the lumber yard buys a pair of shoes, and that goes into the pocket of the salesman, and you get the idea of how the multiplier effect works. When an illegal alien or foreign worker who's here legally mails money home, wires money home through remittances, and last year between $125 and $200 billion was sent out of our country, the multiplier effect is lost. So now it works backwards. Every dollar that gets sent out of the country takes $3 out of our economy, the equivalent. Doesn't work. And in fact, the UN and the World Bank, if you go to their websites, are all excited about comprehensive reform. Boy, oh boy, they can't wait for it. If you want to know if something is good for America, go to the UN website, and what they want is probably antithetical to what's best for us. Wonderful organization, the UN. Crazy stuff. They're saying that the fastest way to get more money to flow from the United States to the third world is for America to pass comprehensive reform. Think about that. Think about it. And so now we come to where we are today in Washington with this business of these kids. By the way, many of them, and this is the Pew Hispanic Center, said that 80% of the people coming are between the ages of 15 and 18. These aren't, they are children and they're not. In Latin America, in third world countries, somebody who's 15, 16, 17, 18, 20, they're treated like adults. Very often we're talking about gang members. You may be talking about disease. We're concerned about the Ebola virus. And this isn't, oh, my God, they have cooties. You know, somebody tried to demean the point. The reality is, if you remember back, Ellis Island was a quarantine station that was run by public health in conjunction with the immigration authorities. So this is hardly a matter of making bad, you know, accusations about immigrants. This is actually about doing what's right for America. And so we're supposed to keep out people that have dangerous communicable diseases. How do you keep them out if they don't subject themselves for inspection at a port of entry? This becomes a problem. And that's exactly where we now stand. This becomes a problem. So if we're going to look at things from a reasonable perspective, folks, you understand very quickly, problem that we face is that the United States has got to gain control over its borders. It's got to do what it needs to do so that Americans are protected. This is about protecting American lives and American jobs. Nothing less than that. Absolutely nothing less than that. It is so wrong and so false to make these other accusations, I don't even know where to begin. This is what people really need to understand, that what we are witnessing now is a meltdown in the systems that were put in place to protect the lives of Americans. This does not compute. And this is what we're hearing. They talk about the need for the United States to give the folks who are here opportunities to stay here. I feel bad for people coming from third world countries. There's no two ways about it. But we can't bring on the world. If we were in a lifeboat right now and we were filled to capacity and there were other people thrashing about in shark-infested waters, but our own families were in the lifeboat, what would you do? What in the world would you do? And what you would do is to say, we're going to not allow this to continue. We can't bring those people onto the lifeboat without jeopardizing the lives of everybody who's here. And that's really wherein lies the problem. We have got to have a sense of reasonableness about what we can and can't do for our own citizens, what we can and can't do for our own country. And when they talk about gaining operational control, 90% operational control over our borders in high traffic areas only, what are they really talking about? What in the world are they really talking about? And what they're talking about is nonsense. This is not about operational control. I really believe that there are some good members of Congress that are very angry and very concerned. But for the most part, the Republicans are probably just as ecstatic as anybody at where things now stand. Because think about it. The aliens are coming. We had this happen with Reagan. We've seen this before. We had the same problem with George W. Bush. It's both sides of the aisle. So they get to beat up on the president and scream and rant and rave. And believe me, he gets the lion's share of the blame. I'm not giving any passes to President Obama or this administration or the Democrats. But really and truly, how many Republicans are really appalled at what's happening right now? And the answer is, these people are very, very happy, I believe, with the current state of affairs, because this is providing them with the opportunities that they want. It's the opportunity to have this massive influx of foreign nationals that the Chamber of Commerce wants, that the immigration lawyers want. And by the way, while we're on the topic of immigration lawyers, if you want to have some fun, check out members of Congress and see how many of those congressmen and women are immigration lawyers. Because when they look at a massive influx of foreign nationals, you know what they're seeing? They are seeing clients. They are seeing clients. We may see competitors for our jobs. We may be seeing a problem of public health or crime or whatever, but the lawyers see clientele. That's what they see. And that's why we have a serious problem. That's why we need to really make certain to get our voices heard. Understand what the magnitude of the problem is. Understand where this could be leading us. It's not taking us in a very good direction, folks. This is a very dangerous set of circumstances. And we really have to get our politicians to represent us, because that's not happening now. Absolutely not happening, and creates serious problems for the United States of America. It creates serious problems for the citizens of the United States. This is certainly not something that's in our own best interest. Keep an eye on what's going on, but I ask that you please be engaged in the process, that you make certain to reach out to your elected representative. Elections are coming. They need to hear from us. I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. This has never been more true than it is today. Indeed, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. I'm having a little bit of a computer glitch this evening. I don't know if we're going to be able to have the usual ending track go at the end of this program. But I do want to thank all of you for being with me. I'm going to have some exciting news about some new opportunities that I'm being provided with to get the message out there in the public realm. More to follow on that in the next few weeks. Some very exciting possibilities. But for now, I ask that you go to capsweb.org. My good friends in Santa Barbara, California, out on the West Coast, they do a great job. Check out their website. Look for the articles. Look for my article as well as everybody else's. And please visit michaelcutler.net, my own personal website. And I want to remind all of you that democracy is not a spectator sport. Thank you so much for joining me this evening. We'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.